Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout with the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. One of the first times I haven't stumbled through that name. And Traditions Training, and of course, we've got the Godfather on, Bobby Halton, with us today. And we've got a good group, man. It's a pretty large group. The fire service instructors definitely went to bat today and got us a bunch of people on, and that's always a good thing. But hey, so before we even start talking about, you know, our topic today, obviously we just, all of us are still jet lagged and beat up from Bobby, and we got yelled at for, you know, like a half an hour on Wednesday. Then Dan yelled and Doug yelled. So I'm tired of getting yelled at. So what are you going to yell at us about today there, Chief Halton? Tell us what happened out there last week.
I hate you. No, well, I'm sorry I yelled at everybody, but
it's all good.
I thought Dan and Doug were amazing. Dave Page was fascinating. And then Frank Viscuso, what a gentleman, what a great lineup of speakers. It was really just a pleasure to be there and hear them all. But to a larger point, it was nice to be back and hear everybody, you know, just talking fire everywhere you went. You know what I mean? Whether you were sitting down at breakfast, whether you're sitting down at dinner, whether you were, you know, just bumping into somebody in the hall, it's like, hey, what's going on? You know, what are you doing? But you know, we're doing this. We just bought that, or we had to look at our scheduling, or, you know, we changed this, or, you know, we're recruiting, or we're having this issue or having that issue. I thought it was fascinating. And it was amazing to me was the amount of emoting that was going on. In other words, everyone, because of the human condition, and no disrespect to this format here, this is great for broadcasting. This is great for television, if you will, what we used to call it in my day. You know, this is great for having a conversation. But there's nothing like, you know, one-on-one. There's nothing like, you know, sitting down across the table. There's nothing like, you know, pulling up a couple of chairs in the corner of the room or being in a classroom with somebody to be able to stop and say, ask a question. And there were so many great presentations, whether it was from the John Bilch talking about stress and neuroscience, or whether it was talking about, you know, flow rates from Kirk Allen and pump panel operations. It was just everywhere you went, rooms were full. Everybody was excited. The outside activities were just amazing. The Fool's Bash was just a super time. The Union Party was, all of them were larger than they'd ever been ever in the history of FDIC. And I think it was just because we're back to normal and everybody's excited to be back to normal. And so I wanted to say thank you to everybody who participated. But the other reason I want to come on, and I apologize, I have to leave a little early because unlike the rest of these guys, I've got a full-time job. I'm just kidding. But I have a full-time job also. And one of my big bosses scheduled a meeting at 12:30. So I've got to get ready for it and after action and planning and all that good stuff. So I did want to let everybody know that the call for presentations is open. And we were just discussing it before we went live on air. If you haven't taught at FDIC and you would like to, the most surefire way to get your foot in the door is to write a brief article. And remember, we are interested in everything and anything that has to do with the fire service. And we're particularly interested in how you did it or how you believe we should do it. You know, opinions are everywhere. If you want opinions, there's plenty of blog places to blog. But in fire engineering, we want to look at, well, here's an issue, you know, and say it's staffing. Say it's a staffing for a growth. Okay, here's the issue. Here's what we did, or here's what you could do, or here's some options. Here's the reasons why. Here's how you evaluate it, right? So if you look at the problem, then how did you respond to it? How did you evaluate it? What do you want it to look like if you're successful, right? In other words, just saying that you want to get, you know, better staffing or have, why? What would it look like if you're successful? And even today's topic, we're going to be talking about the incident commander and the company officer and how to integrate better on the fire ground, you know, in emergency situations. Okay, so what should that look like in your organization if it's successful? Because what's going to work in Bipperville and Bopperville is different than Kipperville and Copperville, right? We're a very parochial profession, and that's not good or bad. That's actually fantastic because Tip O'Neill was right. He said government that's closest to the people is the best form of government because you're most responsive to that community. So your fire department should should be malleable enough so that it meets the needs of the community that it exists in, right? Like the FDNY would do really poorly in Minot, North Dakota, because they just wouldn't have any work to begin with. But I mean, it's a freezingly cold place with isolated populations. You need a department there that's more spread out, that's more agrarian, for lack of a better word. But that's not right or wrong or good or bad. And I'm not putting down the FDNY. I'm not putting down Minot, North Dakota. But it's just a very rural spot, right? So their needs and their demands are going to be very different. You know, demand is out in Oakland. It's very different from rural Oklahoma. You know, you've got guys and gals on the call from the St. Louis area, Chief Silvernail. Very different region than Miami-Dade. Very different region than Bangor, Maine. And so you want to look at things locally first. Always locally first. We respond to, you know, my talk this year was "You Were Worth It," and it really is about that individual who calls us. It's about that person. It's not some vague them. It's not some collective, you know, community. It's about that poor person having the heart attack, or that poor person whose house is on fire, or that individual who just had a car wreck. It's about that person, that one person. Your whole world suddenly shifts to that one person. And that's what your tactics are about. It's searching for life. It's trying to save people's property. And sometimes, you know, we focus on the McMansions, we focus on the warehouse storage places, we focus on the high rises. But when you think about it, you know, if you can save a few possessions out of a double wide, or somebody who's living in a, you know, 900 square foot shotgun, that's all they got, you know, and them recovering. When folks with limited income are forced to recover, it's a lot harder than somebody who is, you know, well-heeled like I am, you know, who's got insurance, who's got, you know, you have to remember that sometimes it's about underwear and medicine. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I and all the guys on the, you know, it's all guys on the call. So most of us will wear our jeans 2 or 3 days in a row. My wife hates that. She's like, "You wore those yesterday." I'm like, "Yeah, but they're still pretty clean." You know what I mean? But you always change your underwear. And my Uncle George once told me, he said, that's about dignity. He really did. My Uncle George was a New York City fireman. And he said, you that's dignity. And if you're really poor, you can't go out and buy, you know, 10 new sets of underwear the next day. You know, so if you can save people's undershorts and medicine, you can change their lives. And so FDIC, we're looking for, and fire engineering, we're looking for everything. And EMS also, you know, we brought in a ton of fire rescue content into FDIC this year, and it was extremely well received. I mean, the only point we do extrication is to get the body out of the car. The only reason we go into burning buildings is to pull people out, and then we save their property. But we first search for life. You know, we don't search for the underwear first. We search for the people first. So, you know, all of that matters. And so it was really exciting to see the GEMS games, where they had a really fantastic, they had a collapse scenario, and they had a firefighter who suffered an electrocution. They had another person who was having an asthmatic attack based upon the debris. And it was just amazing, because the entire audience was filled with, you know, EMTs and paramedics and firefighters, you know, that were cross-trained people, and everybody was riveted to watching the men and women compete in that event. And it was phenomenal. So I know I've gone on for far too long. Please go to FDIC.com, put in your call for presentations. If you want to increase your chances, you know, get us a short article about what you're doing, or what impassions you. We can't thank you enough for your support. Everything matters. You know, everything, there's no small stuff in the fire service. There just isn't. That's a great book if you're a CPA or a librarian, or, you know, and no disrespect to CPAs and librarians, but I mean, in the fire service, there is no small stuff, because it all matters. So please, you know, think about writing. We'd love to have you. We're so grateful for y'all. We're extremely grateful to Ricky and the Institute of Fire Service Instructors. If you're not a member, please think about joining. It's a great organization. You know, contact Brian. He'll be happy to fill you in. Chief Silvernail, are you going to allow him to travel to FDIC for 2023 to speak?
I think I'm thinking about it.
I'm kind of on the fence. But Brian will be doing one of the main talks at FDIC next year. He'll be one of our keynoters. So looking forward to hearing what Brian has to share. So that'll be phenomenal. We're going to have Brian Brush, the Rescue Project, and we're going to also have Dan Sheridan from FDNY and a second round draft pick to be named later. So we've got one slot still open. So, and I've got a few names that we're kicking around. So thank you so much. And I'll go away now. So Ricky, I'll turn the show back over to you.
Okay. Sounds good. I mean, I think everybody had a great time. It was, I got there a little late for a Dan's thing, and I was shocked that it was standing room only. There wasn't an open seat in the house. Obviously you were leading that off, but it was great to see full hallways and a lot of people. So that was great. So we'll kind of jump into the topic a little bit back quarter after, but so I kind of wanted to hit on this because I think this is kind of a piece that gets lost sometimes on the fire ground, is that the incident commander has a duty to that company officer and what that company officer needs. And obviously I'll hit Brian, Mr. Simmons, Jim and Aaron for a little bit, and Roger, but I wanted to start with Josh. And Josh, I'm going to have to throw you in the mix here because, when COVID hit and you had just started doing your presentation on a unfortunate line of duty death, where you're part of a writ activation, we talked, in that program, that's on YouTube. You can go to our website. Obviously Josh has it. Also Howard County does a great program each year, for Nathan Flynn, to honor his commitment to training. And they have that on YouTube. So you can download some of that. But, when we're talking about that incident commander, we'll go to the extreme with with Josh, and then kind of bring it back with, Roger and MacArthur, if he gets back from a run. But what are you looking for Chief Heller or myself, Chief Silvernail, what are you looking for us, when you're inside the building, battling the fire, in zero visibility, and we're sitting outside in our heated and air conditioned Tahoes, talking to you on the radio. So that was my thing for today. So.
Yeah. Man, you're throwing me right to the wolves right at the gate.
Yeah, I know I was.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. I had a couple things, outlined a couple of the big topics that come to mind for me, and given our line of duty Woodscape a little bit of a nod there, two things really come to mind. One of them is for that incident commander to not become task saturated. We go back to that. At the time we had much of a blue card command driven style compared to a orders driven model. And there's a time and a place for both. Absolutely. There's going to be that time when that incident commander needs to be strong, kind of rein things back in and provide some clear direction with clear expectations. But I think there's also a time when that incident commander is going to get too involved. They're going to get a little too far in the weeds, and the general orders, hopefully, that you have in place, or maybe it's just a strong culture and discipline in place, is going to be the thing that's going to dictate actions throughout the incident. And we've seen it where that incident commander, they're ordering where water supply is being directed to, what hydrants are going to be getting picked up, what lines are going to what floors. And the more that continues, when bad things start to happen, and now the expectation is that incident commander is directing all the little pieces, we've seen that our officers are becoming less autonomous. Now they're looking for direction from that incident commander when we need to have these free thinking individuals on the scene to be able to go in and make the problem go away. So there are some like high stress addresses in our jurisdiction, as in any jurisdiction, where we need to have those incident commanders to have a strong presence, stage everybody out. Maybe they have a better, more intimate knowledge of what's going on, and like, hey, things are rapidly evolving. I need to assign things as they come. But by and large, that shouldn't be standard operating procedure. So to have them not get in the weeds, have our officers do what they're paid to do, and make the decisions. Because when bad things happen, that command officer is just going to get too far down there. They're saturated and they're going to become overwhelmed. And then you have all these officers on scene looking for direction and things are too spun up. So yeah, that was definitely one of them. And then what comes along on the heels of that would be, I'm looking for a command officer that is not going to be that checkbox officer. So there are times when I'm getting transmissions out and I can tell just by the way they're talking to me that they're not paying a whole lot to the incident scene. They're taking notes on their tax sheet and, you know, hey, 15 minutes hit, I'm doing a PAR check. You know, I'm getting my accountability report. We still have things rapidly evolving and we're trying to make things happen and create change. And again, when bad things happen, they're going to divert to the command sheet and they're sitting there checking boxes and making sure they're hitting all these benchmarks and they're actually not really paying attention to the scene, the crew accountability, and the actual needs and resources of the units on the interior. So, and man, that can be a deep dive in and of itself there on that one. So, yeah, I just threw out two big ones. I know we're kind of tight on time. I think I've taken up enough time with that. Like I said, just those two alone, I think we can get really spun up on and go down a rabbit hole. But probably two of the biggest glaring things would be that. Don't let the command officer be task saturated and don't let him be a checkbox officer.
Ricky, I'd love to follow up on that.
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
So, Josh, I can't agree more with you on the whole task saturated. When I was a battalion chief, you know, I wanted to be basically a traffic cop to make sure that my companies were doing what they're supposed to do on the standard operating guideline. You know, there's always this big argument of, you know, should you be standard operating guideline driven or should you be command driven, you know, from the guy in the front yard? There's a reason why in World War II, you know, we directed our turrets at the bridges of the Japanese, because once you took that out, the boats would float, you know, aimlessly. I believe 100% that are, you know, we put these captains in these roles because they are the ones who should understand, you know, what happens in the standard operating guideline, how it flows. But you're right. A lot of these organizations get so task saturated that they want to think and get too micromanaged within the standard operating or on the fire ground. And man, that's a big one for me. You know, if you can get your battalion, and that's, it's all beforehand. If you know your battalion, like the back of your hand, like you should as a command officer, you should know their capabilities and understand, you know, they should be ready to go and know the standard operating guideline. You know, and nothing is more beautiful when you're sitting in that front yard, you're watching these companies come in and they're doing exactly the standard operating guideline. Now, if you see something wrong or see something, you know, if you got to call an audible, that's a great time. But yeah, 100%, Josh, thanks for bringing that up.
All right. So, you know, I'll go down, you know, once again, we'll get a line officer and then we'll either, you know, jump back to, you know, Chief Heller or Brian or whatever. So, you know, if you don't know, Roger Steger's, you know, in the city of Baltimore, obviously, they've been in the news a lot lately. I mean, good God, you guys tried to burn down the city again the other day. Were you actually working, Roger, or were you, you know, watching from afar?
I was home.
Okay.
But I mean, I didn't go back till yesterday. I went in yesterday. So
I got you. So, but I mean, obviously, you know, since, you know, that the first quarter of this year, you know, as things in the Baltimore City Fire Department evolved and, you know, obviously with the tragic line of duty death, those three firefighters on Stricker Street. So, I mean, you know, you're that company officer now. What is the interaction between you and the on-scene incident commanders now? You know, and what do you need from them? Because obviously I listen to, you know, I listen to a lot of Baltimore fires and hear the chitter chatter back and forth. So, but you're inside the building, I'm not. So
I think a lot of it is taking your normal companies and your normal battalion chiefs into account more. So it's trust and mutual respect along with sound tactical decision-making on both parts. So the chief always kind of stresses on the company officers and the guys on what they're doing, whether it be SOP or command driven, whatever, but that it's always more or less sometimes one-sided. We give reports from inside out, but as the inside crews, we're also looking for those reports from the outside in, more so than just the the standard, evacuate the building or whatever, give condition updates as a command officer from time to time too. So we understand from my perspective, especially in like a row home situation, if I'm pushing through fire on the first floor, knocking it, and I don't see it traveling up the stairs or whatever else, I'm going to check for extension. But as a command officer, hey, you have fire coming out of the scuttle on the roof or from the rear of the second floor, indicating that we need to get up there. Any, whether so conditions as well as any kind of structural issues, that's where the sound tactical presence, like Josh was talking about, really comes to place. If you're telling you're starting to see it push through the bricks or anything, then okay, I can couple that with what I'm seeing on the inside. But on the other aspect is with the smoke condition inside, I may not see any of those conditions, so that'll help me make my decision. Okay, hey, we're a little deep, he's saying it's this or that from the outside, we have that respect, and I know he's looking out for me. Okay, it's time to come outside or change our game plan or whatever the case may be.
All right, Aaron, do you want to follow that up or?
Yeah, those Roger's points, Josh's points, Chief Silvernail's points, right on. Really, I think we're all on the same page. When I was a captain, I wanted the chiefs to give me the info from outside the same way I needed to give them the info from the inside. The crystal ball just rarely works at the command post, and you know, the more information we both have, I felt the better the exchange, the better decisions we were both going to make, both the chiefs and us as interior officers. So I appreciate those comments a lot. I think, you know, Roger's living that every day, so he knows it. Couple things I see, especially from maybe less experienced officers, where they'll get into that, as Josh said, checking the boxes, basically. You know, they went to Blue Carter, they took some, you know, ICS, they got their 300 and 400 or whatever it is, and they're going to sit there, you know, basically the clipboard chief. And for the most part in the fire service, clipboard chiefs aren't usually the most successful, and in our area aren't usually the most respected. So there has to be that level of flexibility that you can be the IC who has to keep everything dialed in and as tight as possible, but also the flexibility to use your senses and get a good feeling of what you're seeing, smelling, hearing, you know, just reading the building, reading. I listened to Mo Davis talk at the Joey D conference a few weeks ago, and one of the things Mo was talking about was he likes being on the front lawn because he can look in a guy's eyes and see what's going on with some of his officers as he's sending them in. And I've always felt that same way, that it gave me that flavor for what was going on. Maybe that's because I was a company officer so long and I always got that, but it just, there's a time to be in your buggy. There's a time to be tied to a command board, and then there's a time to be on the front lawn or the sidewalk. And I think experienced chiefs know how to manage those, and with good, strong SOPs and trust in the companies in their districts or their divisions, it all seems to flow a lot easier to me. So I think that's where it is for me. With us, the staffing levels changed. So now our operation has changed a little bit. So we have to be more flexible as officers that way. So it's just that constant movement of, we have to be able to adjust to what's going on. And in most communities now, it's not just a bedroom community or just an industrial community. We have so much from large industrial, large commercial to, you know, the high rises to final villages, so to speak, of houses. So I think you treat the fires, depending on what's in front of you, depending on the situation and your response protocols, you just can't get locked into being that clipboard fire chief and we're just going to check the box at every call. There's got to be flexibility. And I think that just comes with knowing your organization and mutual aid and everything that comes with it.
All right, Chief. Well, I plan to go like between company officers and chief, but apparently the citizens of the District of Columbia needed MacArthur more than he wanted to be on the radio show. So, but I did not know Chief Simmons. This is the first time meeting him. So first of all, let Chief Simmons introduce himself, and then, you know, any input that you have in the last two would be great.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, folks. Demond Simmons, member of the Oakland Fire Department out here in Northern California. excellent dialogue so far, and this is in line with many of the things that I emphasize back here in my home organization and across the region. As the first gentleman was stating, Joshua, he made two salient comments. He talked about the IC cannot be task saturated, and we all can agree with that. As I was thinking about that comment, as that comment was being mentioned, I was thinking about Hackensack, New Jersey. All of us remember that incident. Oftentimes when that incident is discussed, we're discussing it from a building construction perspective, bolstering construction. But one of the things that came out of that after action report was that the incident commander had missed some critical radio traffic. And once again, before I go any further, that's not to say that that's the reason why those individuals died at that incident. But as we talk about today, that incident commander missed some key points because he was helping advancing hose line, which is a very important skill. However, the million-dollar question, should he have been doing that or someone else? And we all know the answer to that. And then, you know, I often hear this come up in conversation, not only on the East Coast, but also out here in the West Coast. We talk about checkbox officers, ICs, company officers, chief officers. And we all agree that there has to be some flexibility there because the incident is so dynamic within itself. But think about it. Every time we get on an airplane, and hopefully that pilot, I mean, that captain and that co-pilot, while we are boarding, and if you're in first class, you're getting your wine and coffee and all that good stuff, those two pilots, they're going through a checklist. So checklists within themselves are not necessarily a bad thing. They can become a bad thing when we simply rely on a checklist, tactical worksheet, checkbox, whatever you want to call it, and not rely on the men and women who are inside of that building, the men and women who are on the Bravo, Charlie, and Delta side of that building to provide us with critical information. So some of the expectations that I have of incident commanders here in Oakland, company, whether it's a company officer, chief officer, number one, he or she has to be decisive. Number two, they have to have a plan and a backup plan, and both that initial plan and that backup plan has to support the incident priorities. Number three, what the company officer expects from the IC is to have a hazard management plan or risk management plan. I'm not a big fan of the term risk management. I'm definitely not a big fan of risk a lot to save a lot, and risk none to save none, because what does that really tell us? But have a hazard management plan. So whether you want to use that ICS 215A form and identify the hazards and identify control factors. The company officer, he or she expects the IC to have enough resources on scene to handle all of the tactical objectives. Number five, that incident commander, the expectation is that he or she is flexible in their decision-making. And then number six is there has to be two-way dialogue. We use this term situational awareness a lot. And I always tell folks, if you ever want to confuse yourself in terms of what situational awareness means, is look it up. I keep it simple. Situational awareness is those verbal and visual cues that help guide your decision-making. So it has to be two-way dialogue. And then last but not least, that incident commander, he or she has to quickly be able to analyze and synthesize that incident, break it down, build it up, and give some type of meaning so that an incident action plan could be developed based on that. And I think that's whether you are in Baltimore, Oakland, St. Louis, or all other places in between, if an incident commander can do that, it will ensure firefighter safety to its highest degree.
Okay, well, I got stuff written down here because Chief Silver Narrow got me all wound up I was getting ready to jump on my soapbox, but didn't do it. So, Brian, do you want to add some stuff in here before I jump on that soapbox?
Yeah. Because God only knows where that'll end up. I think the big thing, you know, knowing Ricky, who knows? I think one of the things that, you know, I take away from this is obviously the training aspect of it. You know, that the fire ground is basically like our big game, right? So If we want to have trust, and, you know, Josh and Roger brought up some great points as company officers back when I was company officer. I thought the same things. You know, I got to be able to trust that battalion chief that he's making good decisions on my behalf. He's got my back. I got his back. What he's telling me is right. And I think that all goes back to the idea that this is a game sport. And so, you know, just like any big game, we have to practice, and it comes back down to training. And if we, as a company officer or a shift commander or deputy chief, whatever, you know, everybody's got to be at that training so that everybody knows what everybody's capabilities are, right? If we see something going on the fire ground that you've never seen before, because you haven't been to a training in 5 or 7 years as a chief officer, and then you're pulling a crew out and you're like, hey, what are you doing? You can't do that. And they're like, we've been doing this for 10 years. Sorry, this is your first fire you've been to in 10 years. You know, I see a lot of captain's head shaking and things like that, because it's probably, unfortunately, the reality, right? So, you know, most of the things that we see is these, you know, admin chiefs, and I don't want to admit to being one yet, but, you know, some of these admin chiefs don't get out of the office, and then all of a sudden they show up on this big fire and they're questioning things. And it's like, well, how can you question that when God's honest truth, we've been training on it, you know, on different things. The fire service is a dynamic sport, dynamic field, if you will, whatever you would call it. And so, you know, if we're going to be in command of calls as you know, chief officers, I think we owe it to the company officers that are working their asses off, working their butts off, excuse me, for the team, right, to be there, if nothing else, than observing what they're doing, right? And I think that's a critical point to build that trust. Soapbox is all yours.
Nah, I'm going to get back, because I want to go back to Josh. I mean, so Josh has had to listen to, you know, three chiefs talk now and give their perspective. And once again, you know, it's the guy inside the building. So, I mean, you got anything you want to add here since we, Josh, or?
Roger hit a good point, making sure conditions on the inside match the conditions on the outside. I've been on both sides of that. And so it comes down to trust and, like, just very clear communication. We had a fire just last week where we had to convince some officers that, no, it's actually safe to go in, because what we were seeing on our side looked a lot better than what they were seeing on their side. And that's actually the only way we were able to get the fire out, was to go back in and make things happen. So trusting in the transmissions, but yes, they need to match up. I think no matter what side of the fence we're on, what some of the things we were discussing is all about that balance. Yes, sometimes there's a time for the tax sheet. Sometimes we just need that free thinking person to not meddle in affairs of things. The resource deployment, I'm a huge fan of. Part of that resource deployment is, maybe this is me being selfish, but nothing drives me more crazy than a unit that gets assigned in front of me when they shouldn't have been. So tracking your resources, maybe that is where the command sheet comes from. But if I get punked on a fire and I shouldn't have been just because the chief officer wasn't tracking things, it drives me up a wall. So I know that's a little down in the weeds, but man, that it gets me fired up. You know, I should have been working. Just seeing if I had anything else in my notes here. And then something that we got a little wrapped up in our department, we're getting a lot better with though, is that if you're going to assign a division or a group to a single officer and have them manage resources underneath them, make sure they are also in a forward position. I don't know if this is an issue elsewhere, but sometimes a division or group supervisor, they're actually going to pull back and like, all right, I need to see what all is going on. And maybe they're on the exterior. They're not actually with their units. You need to be in the middle. You need to be forward thinking so that you can get that transmission out to that command officer, so together you can make the problem go away. If you're a lieutenant, a captain, you get in charge of managing the division or group, make sure you're in a position where you can actually take care of those people, because you're that single point of communication. You should be having face-to-face communication. You're not somewhere on the exterior or somewhere pulled back. You know, make sure that you are, going to get the right transmissions out. I had a whole handful of things, but yeah, I think we're all pretty much on the same page. Yeah, even if we are deviating from each other, that's always a balancing act between the two. You can't go hard in the paint on one side or another with this. Good discussion.
So Josh, I take it you like the guy, the New York City Chiefs aide, when the chief just looks over and goes, hey, who's next up? And he already knows who's in line.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little biased. I was an aide for a while. So yeah,
you watch those videos. That's all that you, hey, who's next up? And he looks to his aide and the aide tells him the company. So I guess you got to be good to the aide rather than, you know.
Yeah, it's true. You got to be good to the aide. If you got a really awesome chief, they'll let that aide go to work too. So I went to some great fires as an hey, and I got to play. Man, you don't see that a whole lot anymore, but yeah.
So what I was going to get on, so this may leave, obviously Roger's been chief officer and Josh is certainly capable to be one and should be one in his department very soon, hopefully. That's a hint and a nudge to Josh because he'd be a great chief officer. But I want to go back to something Chief Silvernail said was that, are you an SOP-driven department or are you a command-driven department? And so we're going to go away from the company officers for a minute. And because I wanted to go on this is that, I think that you can be both. You're, as I see it, and, I'm not speaking for my man, Chief Schultz, is that, the SOPs drive us till the chief gets there. So, gets people in right positions, gets hose lines and people moving into the right spots. And then once the chief gets there, he takes in the whole scene. He sees what's happening, see what, if we've had good conversion, what problems are still outstanding, all the stuff that, Chief Simmons was talking about. Then, hey, we may have to deviate from, this SOP and go this route, or we may have to put this company here, that company there. Is everybody in agreement or disagreement with that? Or so, Chief, since you said it, I'll let you go back to Chief Silvernail, and then we'll go back to Chief Simmons.
No, Rick, I'm totally in agreement with you. what I was referring to are those first few companies that have to have decisions made for them. I want those decisions made right away, according to the standard operating guideline. And yeah, it would be great if I could just be just stand in the front yard and be a traffic cop. But as the fire ground is extremely, dynamic, and there has to be those audibles made. I mean, you see football all the time with the, you think you got the greatest play put in there, but then there's an audible because the defense changes. It's the same thing with a fire. Fires are all different. They require all different circumstances. So yeah, the battalion chief or the IC has got to be able to make those changes or put the resources effectively where they're at. However, on a micromanagement type of perspective, like we're talking, put those resources where they're at, but then make the company officers allow them to make those decisions that work for that fire ground.
Chief Heller or Chief Simmons?
Yeah, just to go back and reemphasize that point there, there has to be a combination of following SOPs and SOGs, equally important, taking what the incident giving you. As Chief just mentioned, using an analogy from a football team, come to a line of scrimmage, you can ready to run a play, it's gonna be a pass play. However, the defense presents in a manner that requires you to now audible and change because that pass play is potentially not gonna work. You have to take it. One of the things that I emphasize to folks is that why following SOGs and SOPs is equally important. If we go back to the most recent incident, I think it was Grand Falls or Great Falls, those two fire departments up in Illinois where the firefighter died, those two organizations were fined, or they were fined by OSHA. And part of the fine was that because they did not follow SOPs and SOGs. We all know that you can follow SOGs and SOPs and bad stuff still can happen. That's why it's the combination of following the SOPs and SOGs, and also, if this is a fire, reading that incident, what is this building telling me? Is this building telling me that I need to be inside with 2.5, 2.25, or 2.5-inch hose line versus 1.75? Is this incident telling me that I need to have my personnel apply water from the outside only? Is this building telling me that it's okay for firefighters to be on top of their roof performing topside ventilation? Now, SOPs and SOGs are not going to provide you with that information. Going back to the comment Brian made, all this starts with training and education, creating those mental slides, that recognition prime decision-making. So when we do have a real incident, the plan is that much more effective.
Okay, I want to go back to a company officer before I head to Chief Heller. So Roger, you got anything you want to add on here, or you want to pass it to Chief Heller? Up to you.
I'll just add one other thing is with SOP orders driven command is we always say radio discipline, but I think that applies for the chief officer as well. Along with some of those SOPs going on, we know what certain companies are already doing. You know what your companies, what companies you have. You don't have to reiterate to them at that time, at that moment on every instant. Okay, you know the first two truck is going to get ladders up where they need to be positioned. Now, if there's a deviation in that, you might need to tell them. But when it's every fire ground, that's just tying up time, which could be the time that somebody that's already inside needs to make that mayday, or the other engine's trying to get their radio message out for their second supply line, or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's the officer or the company officer in the rear trying to give a size up from the rear, or possible victims. If you're just talking just to talk, when it's already something that's pre-established, you as a chief officer also need to have that radio discipline and not just force it upon the members and the company officers.
Chief Heller?
Well, again, I think we're hitting a lot of the same stuff. The SOPs and SOGs are a big deal, and having everybody on that same page, understanding that this is the way we operate, why we operate, these are our expected results and our expected positions we plan on putting our people in. I think one of the things that I ran into when I was a company officer, and I try to avoid it as a chief, is are we allowing our people to think and base their decisions on experience and our known resources, our known building construction, or are we so SOP, SOG driven that, again, it's almost checking the box and not free thinking? And I've worked for chiefs that did both, and I absolutely appreciated the ones who were a bit more understanding of free thinking, not freelancing, not doing what you feel like doing when you feel like doing it. But based on the education experience and the training that we've given our people, I don't want robots, and I don't want chiefs who treat my guys like robots. So I think that's a big deal. And again, we talked and we've all said this over and over so far today, is that flexibility of, we may have to drop back and punt. You know, we may have to change tactics quickly. We may see things that other guys aren't seeing. I called in on an interior operation one time. I told the chief, we're getting it. You know, give us a couple minutes. We got this thing. And what he was seeing from the outside was, absolutely, we weren't getting it. I was seeing a microcosm of the fire. And when I came out, I was hot as hell about it. And then when I looked up, I went, that's why you're the chief and I'm the captain. So we just have to give ourselves flexibility. And again, it comes back to that training and trust. The more they train, the more we understand what they do as company officers, and we remember where we came from, the better it's going to be for chief officers as well.
Ryan?
No, I think Chief Heller brings up great points. You know, from the training perspective, you know, if you have the opportunity, you know, switch roles. That's always a good perspective gainer. You know, let the company officer kind of run the training ground and put that chief officer back in that company officer seat. Just it gets that gain of respect for each other. But I think the other part too is, you know, and Chief Silver doesn't, is, you know, I've worked with him for a long time now. He's always told me, he's like, you got promoted for a reason. And, you know, Damon hit on, I think we've all talked about it, is, you know, you are there to make decisions. Your competency was demonstrated through the promotional process and through your scope of work. And so make decisions based on the conditions given to you. Yes, we have SOPs and SOGs and POMs and all those things in place that should define what we do as arriving units on scene, first driving engine, first driving truck, whatever that might be. But if the conditions on the scene are different than what you see as the company officer arriving first due, the first due battalion chief arriving as the incident command, whatever it is, you know, dictate that fire ground, given that that fire ground, as you guys all said, is different than the last fire ground. It's going to be different than the next fire ground. And so we have to have that competency and confidence to make those calls on the fire ground. So it's great. I think we're all saying the same thing, you know, just different versions of saying the same thing, but you know, it's good stuff.
So Josh, you know, we'll go back, you know, let's step back from, you know, Nathan's incident and just go, I mean, on a day-to-day basis on an incident, not fire. We're not talking about firehouse stuff or, you know, any of the craziness stuff that goes on with personnel, just on a fire ground. What does the chief need to provide you to help you do your job better?
Man, just the day-to-day stuff, just providing information. Like there's a lot of things, at least in our department, that get funneled from the top down. Whether it's little things like sometimes it's hydrants out of service, or hey, we got a crazy thing going on with this building. This whole thing's full of asbestos, and then half the building population is out. Half the citizenry's out there going somewhere else. So this thing catches on fire while it's under repair. You got health hazards. You know, getting the information down to us is awesome. The caveat to that would be when they're having their battalion meetings, there's a lot of things that they just need to be the funnel for, or the filter for, let me say. So there's a lot of things that we can get the they can get crews amped up, you know, when they're sitting around the coffee table. And that's the chief's, you know, prime time to be able to filter that information and just control the hearsay. I can't tell you, by the time the chief gets to the next firehouse, the story's already grown legs and things are, you know, spreading like wildfire. So, I mean, just don't play into that. Just don't play into that. Give us the information that we need. Filter what we don't, because you don't need to go through every single line of your battalion minutes and whatever the state of the county is. But give us that information, and then be active. So it's really easy to sit in that office. There's a ton of administrative things that can be happening and going on. But when you hit the street and you're actually watching your crews train, hopefully that's one of the expectations you already put in place, is they're actually getting that hands-on training. Go out there and see what they're doing. Maybe you can add a little bit to it. You can add some benefit. You can, you know, get things spun up and give people other things to think about. But knowing your crew's ability, so that way when you do hit the street, is absolutely paramount. I know that there are chiefs out there that try to get it to where it's like, hey, I can count on all my ships, all my companies, all my crews, or I need to be able to. And it's not an unreasonable expectation. At the same time, as a chief officer, and I can look at the chiefs that we're here with today, you know, you've got your go-to companies when things really go sideways. Right, wrong, or indifferent, we have the strong companies out there that can make things happen. So you need to be, you need to be able to identify what those companies are, what they're capable of. And depending on the circumstance, they may not be the same companies. So getting out there in the street, getting out from behind that desk, just be out with the crews and know what their capabilities are.
Good, Chief. Ricky, Josh has totally stole what I was going to say, so thank you very much. Battalion chiefs or chiefs at that level, or any chiefs, have got to be present, and they got to know, you know, if you're in charge of a battalion, you have to know your battalion, you have to know your cowboys, you have to know the people that are level-headed, those who lack experience, because those are going to make a big difference. You know, when I call inside and they say, hey, you got to get out, you know, and I got that cowboy, it's like, no, I'm good. You know, it's like, no, get out. Or you got the level-headed, you call and like, chief, I think I got this. I'm going to give you 2 to 3 minutes, you know, or the unexperienced ones, it's like, get out, you know, it's all about trust. You got to trust your people. You got to know your people. You should be able, as a battalion chief, to understand the inflection in a voice, you know, what is desperate, what is not. And that's being present and being a training, like Brian had said earlier, it's all about training. That's really where this starts. And, you know, finally, I just want to make the point of predictability. Like I said, IC should understand fire ground behavior. They should understand building construction. And, you know, the time to say get out now, there are times to say get out now, but a lot of times you have that time to predict. I used to like giving my guys the 2 to 3 minute warning. It's like, you got 2 to 3 minutes. If I don't see a change, I'm pulling you out. So I didn't have that company officer saying, man, I'm right there. I could get it. You know, I'm giving you that opportunity. You know, if you don't get it, it's done. But, you know, that I think that's what you guys like seeing. But I, you know, as a company officer, that's what I like to have, is that opportunity. But I'm done. Okay. So I mean, he brings up, you know, the chief brings up an interesting point. So you know, obviously, knowing most where everybody's from, and you know, in our organization, it's 500 square miles, some 49 companies. So I run a command post. If I'm the incident commander, usually I have a career battalion chief in the car with me. And that's one of the things that, you know, when we start getting these weird transmissions from inside the building, you know, it's like, who is that? Do you know who that is? You know, are we trusting this guy? Are we not trusting that guy? You know, what are we doing? But it has to be that quick conversation. You know, recently we had a May Day about probably 3 or 4 months ago, and the battalion chief had done a 360, and I was the incident commander. He comes back and literally gets in the car and says, get him out now. And there was, I didn't waste 3 seconds of getting that out. And that's, you know, talking about building that trust, knowing your people, knowing their abilities. Now, is every battalion chief going to get that trust level? No, because I don't know them that, you know, all of them that well. They may be young. You talk about the experience piece, you know, how well they operate on their firearms. But there's certainly those chiefs that when they say it, it's getting done that instant without any question, you know. And, you know, after we got done, you know, pulling them out and we were able to take a breath, I'm like, all right, what was going on that made you do this? So I know, you know, for this next fire or whatever, you know, what was going on back there that made you say this? Because, you know, I was just operating on exactly what he said without asking questions. So, but that could go for their company officers also is, you know, when a company officer, you know, if Josh is, I know Josh's abilities as a firefighter and an officer and the same with as Roger, you know, if they give me any kind of radio transmission that it's, you know, it's hot, it's warm. And I'm going, well, if it's warm for Josh and Roger, I can't imagine what it's going to be for everybody else. Cause you know, that building could be falling around them and they'll still want to be in there. But knowing those company officers is, and you know, the battalion chiefs knowing their companies, you know, whether you're small or you're large, you know, having those people know each other. And, you know, as you get higher up in an organization, you know, is, I think, you know, like even Brian or you know, Chief Silvernail said is that, you know, or the administrative chief, you know, that shows up has to have that trust in those company officers and the battalion chiefs and the assistant chiefs. So Chief Simmons.
Yes, I want to come back to a couple of comments that were, that were made in regards to strong companies and trust and not trusting. You know, part of me, I like to say my left brain is very pragmatic and a right brain is very utopian. But my left side, pragmatic. Yes, all of us work for organizations where we have a bunch of strong companies and we have some companies that are not necessarily strong. But our job as chief officers is to make every company strong. Because when we arrive at Ms. Jones or Mr. Johnson's house at 2 o'clock in the morning for a structure fire or a hazmat incident or MCI, every company has to be strong. So the question is, what's our role in making every company strong? Secondly, trust and not trusting. Every company officer through legitimate power has to be able to make decisions. How do we build that trust between the company and the chief officer? So now when we are in the hazard zone operating, regardless of who that individual is, he or she is, when they communicate some critical information to me as the incident commander, I trust their decision-making. I trust their assessment. Because if we continue with, well, I trust this individual, I don't trust this individual, it puts us in a perilous situation. When we continue to foster strong companies and weak companies, it puts not only firefighters, but also citizens in a perilous situation. We have to reverse that. Every company that shows up on scene has to be strong. And as incident commanders, we have to be able to trust the information that's being communicated from us and also to us from those company officers when they're serving as division and group supervisors. One of the things I tell my company officers, when I assign you as a division or group supervisor, you have 5 important responsibilities. I use the acronym SPORT. You're responsible for that situation. You're responsible for the priorities that are assigned to you. You're responsible for those tactical objectives that are assigned to you, those resources and that territory. Those are 5 important responsibilities as a division or group supervisor. And part of that has to be trust. And every individual and company that's operating on that floor, that division, that area, they all have to be strong.
Okay. And Chief Heller, did I miss something here on this chat room? Or
One of the things Jack Wilson said, experienced IC along with trustworthy company officers is the key. that's exactly right. You know, that is the key. We have to foster that, as G. Simmons said. We have to foster that. It's the only way that we get better is by working together and understanding each other. And that's how we get to those companies who we feel they're all playing in the big leagues, you know. And we don't have to worry that one of them's only swinging at single A when we need them to be at the big league level. And I think that's you know, Jack's a very experienced guy out of Delaware, and I think he's spot on.
I mean, I think, you know, most of us, you know, obviously if anybody's watching Hump Day Hangout on a Wednesday afternoon, obviously they're into the job. And obviously the, you know, the 10 or 9 or 10 of us are on here into the job. It baffles me sometimes when I run calls and, you know, if you're into the job, you want to go to that box alarm. You want to go to the structure fire. You want to, you know, you wouldn't even want to get dispatched on one. I mean, you know, depending on what your activity level is. And then how we don't have a conversation, even on a pot of food or a kitchen fire, or, you know, we're chasing a light ballast of with those company officers. You know, we always want to have that hot wash or after action critique for, you know, if we got a room off or two rooms off or something bigger. But to even have them on the, you know, the insignificant call, once again, you know, making sure that the company officers were all aligned with what the incident commander was thinking. The incident commander was all aligned with what the company officers were doing. And, you know, and not just going, hey, this is our third reported structure fire tonight. We're done talking about them. Is that you can never give up those opportunities or training, regardless of the building. Even, you know, I know for Roger and for Josh, and obviously probably for everybody, you know, we have that same group of buildings that we run all the time. You know, we know the street really well, but we always need to polish ourselves up for that, for when it's going to be that next fire. So, Brian, I'm sorry, you're the only one who haven't hit back up here yet. So,
no, I think everybody's pretty much hit it on the spot. So I'm not going to be a little bewildered at the point.
All right. So, you know, we're getting close to that time, the 1 hour. You know, Pete from Fire Engineering will be hitting up my phone here any second. So, with closing thoughts here, we'll start with Chief Simmons and then I'll go around the room. So
I'll just keep mine short. It's all about that alignment, and that alignment is twofold: alignment in terms of people in the hazard zone, and then alignment of that incident action plan, incident priorities, tactical objectives, and task level activities. They have to be in alignment. And when people are in alignment and the IEP and all facets of the IEP are in alignment, success in the hazard zone takes place. Thank you.
Chief Silverdale?
You know, like we said before, it's all about trust. You know, you have to have the ability to trust our company officers, but you also have to have the ability to trust us as the incident commanders. You know, it's very challenging to go from a company officer to that front yard battalion chief or car, however you do it. You know, you just have to realize that you're hands off now and you have to trust those to do the work ahead of you and just hopefully give them what their expectations are, because it is two way. You know, we say we have expectations of them, but you know what? Their expectations of us are just as important.
Josh?
No, thanks again for having me on. Quick shout out to the department. We have our Nate Flynn training days coming up, our annual training, July 23rd. I'm sure that's going to be announced soon. And I think we got some heavy hitters coming on to help out for that one. I'll just leave it at that. I think great discussion. I think we're all largely on the same page. And last thing I'll leave with is at the end of the day, beginning of the incident, end of the incident, you know, culture in the fire service, that chief is also the setting the tone just for the attitude. So you're that sense of calm. So if things start going awry, you either need to reel things back in, or you're the one setting the tone right out the gate in the station, on the fire scenes. So if you can provide that sense of calm and security right from the get-go, a lot of downstream issues will probably even take care of themselves. Like, hey, the chief's not spun up about this. We're probably in a good spot. So, but yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, Josh, be sure to send me the information. Is that all in person, or are they going to do it virtual and in person?
I know they're hashing out the plans now. Historically, it's been virtual during pandemic, and then we try to do in person. I think this year it might be a blend of the two. So I think Roger might know better than I would, but as soon as we get information, I'll be sure to share that out.
I'm sorry, is Roger a heavy hitter all of a sudden, or what happened? But now, so yes, I mean, I think that's the new way anyways, is that virtual stuff is, I mean, even Andrew Fredericks has got the hybrid again, this coming up in 2022 or 2023. They're doing that. So it'd be 23 because I guess they're back in Alexandria. So I think they're doing a hybrid version of that also. So, so if you get that information to us, we'll get it out on our social media. And I'm sure the fire service instructors will do the same. So get that thing well attended as it always is. So Roger, heavy hitter, apparently. Go ahead.
I'm not the one he's referring to.
Oh, okay.
But you might know a couple of the people.
Okay.
So I would say just no matter your rank, just because you took the rank position, whether it be chief officer or company officer or whatever, doesn't automatically make you the only smart one in the room. So sometimes we all need to just check our egos no matter what our rank is or whatnot, understand, build that trust and that mutual respect, understand who you have around you and working for you, and use that to the best of the incident that we have at hand and to serve the citizens.
Brian?
Yeah, I just go back to the idea of the sport. You know, you look at any winning team, you know, practice is how he says the coach on the field. And so, you know, if we're going to be the guy coaching the troops and on the fire ground, if you will, we got to be there at the trainings too. And so I think that's critically important.
And Chief Heller.
Yep, I appreciate it, guys. I just think, you know, the relationships between the company officers and the chief officers, they're just as important as the officer and the fireman's relationship. So it all builds on that trust as we go forward. And lastly, hey, congratulations to Traditions with Dan Shaw getting the promotion, giving a great keynote, and Doug's keynote was absolutely fantastic. So congratulations, guys, you really earned that.
Yeah, I got to, you know, since Doug couldn't make it today, so we get to make fun of him. You know, he was doing his practice for his big keynote, and Brian, you might want to pay attention to this. So the very first day he was doing the Ricky Bobby thing, like he didn't know what to do with his hands or anything like that. So he was grabbing the microphone. So it was good to have good practice, but he knocked it out of the park on Tuesday. Couldn't ask anything better. Paid good homage to his father, you know, who was a longtime FDNY veteran. So, but, you know, I guess to just kind of close it up is that obviously, you know, reiterate, you know, it isn't just, you know, Chief Heller, you know, Chief Silvernail, Chief Simmons, myself and Brian, who are constantly going to FDIC, been going for decades. We need new blood. You know, I'm not the guy that's riding the right front seat anymore, or, you know, pushing down hallways. So we need the Rogers and the Joshes and people that are even below Josh and Roger. You know, they're all firefighters to give us their perspective, to write articles, you know. What happens in Northern California is vastly different than what happens in Baltimore City, but there's a common thread in there somewhere. And, you know, we learn a lot from that, you know, the Oakland, the Stocktons, and, you know, they obviously have great videos that come out and teach us all about, you know, a good aggressive fire attack and a good managed fire department. And hey, we can use some of that on the East Coast. And, you know, so please get out there and don't be afraid to send something to them. You'd be amazed, how easy it is to get in the magazine, and you get good editing. You don't have to be write good. I mean, I write run-on sentences all day long, and Diane just puts commas in there for me. So it's a great thing. So, but, you know, once again, I just wanted to reiterate that company officer. I just can't reiterate how important that position is, how trusted they have to be, how we have to give them every bit of training that we possibly can, and then also have that interaction on the fire ground. Even when it's not a big call, to make sure that we're on the same page all the time. They're understanding what I as an incident commander want, and then I have to understand what they need from me to help them inside the building. So that's kind of what I wanted to get out today. I know we got off on a little bit of a thread, but I think it was all good, all in all. So on behalf of Clarion Events Group and Fire Engineering, we want to thank you for hanging out with us on Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout. Thanks to Bobby Halton and Diane in the group, and thanks to everybody who was on today. This is the biggest group we've had in a long time. And I appreciate everybody's all pumped up from FDIC. So everybody wants to talk fire. So, but I appreciate it. And I hope everybody has a great day. And As always, stay safe out there.